In Acts 15:36, we read, "And some days after, Paul said unto Barnabas, Let us go again and visit our brethren in every city where we have preached the word of the Lord, and see how they do." I think that's particularly appropriate for introducing our speaker tonight. As you know, in February of this year, he took a world trip to our mission field, and he was going there again to see how they were doing, because he had been there in 1966. Brother Stanley Ross needs no introduction to any of us, I'm sure. And I know that we're going to enjoy this story of how our gospel work is flourishing around the world, not only for the story itself, but I think also for the effective and the efficient way that he will present it to us. Brother Ross.
Thank you, Brother Madison, and good evening to all of you. At the outset, we want to express our thanks to the people who have been bringing us these special musical numbers. And especially tonight, I was thrilled with the choir numbers. And we want to thank everyone who is taking part in presenting these musical specials for us. I would like to read just a couple of verses from the 24th chapter of Matthew, really one that we're interested in. But in the third verse, we find as Jesus sat upon the Mount of Olives, the disciples came unto him privately, saying, Tell us, when shall these things be, and what shall be the sign of thy coming and of the end of the world? And we find then that Jesus told them that many things would happen, that there would be some coming, they were saying they were Christ, and there would be wars and rumors of wars, and there would be many would be deceived, and many false prophets and iniquity would abound. And then the 13th says, But he that shall endure unto the end shall be saved, and this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then shall the end come. And in the Diaglot it says, This gospel of the kingdom shall be published in all the world for a witness. We believe that the Church of God General Conference is doing their utmost to see this come about. We now have a copy of the book Systematic Theology in every country of the world, I believe, except Red China. We have our tracts and our heralds and many tracts going into many, many countries of the world. We have people in many countries who are preaching the Word of God. And we are thrilled when we know about new areas that are calling for workers and for literature and for tracts and for this gospel message. And so it's a great privilege to be able to make a visit in February of this year to visit many of these mission fields. It had been the desire to visit Africa, to see the work in Nigeria and Ghana and some people that we have been in contact with in Kenya. But because of the impossibility at the time to get a visa, it was necessary to make some changes. And so we did go to Lebanon, we went to India, we went to the Philippine Islands, we did also go to Israel because we thought there we would meet Brother Oliver Amani from Ghana, but this did not work out since we did not find him there and still are not sure where he is. And so the great thrill to me making this trip was to see the great progress that is being made in our mission field, the great progress that has been made in the 6 years since we visited there in 1966. In 1966, when we visited Brother Sana'a in Lebanon, it was our privilege at that time to immerse him in the waters of baptism in the Mediterranean Sea. We had corresponded with him for a long time, and we visited with him then for a time and then did immerse him in the waters of baptism. At that time, he was meeting in a little hall with a small group of people. At this time, as we visited there, we find that Brother Sana'a had translated the Systematic Bible Study Course lessons, the 29 lessons in Arabic, that these lessons were going into 14 countries of the Middle East, over 6,000 lessons being out, over 1,200 having completed their lessons, and there had been converts in six of these Arab countries. And we were thrilled to have the opportunity to meet Brother Shaker Iskander. It is Brother Iskander who came in contact with these lessons in Cairo, Egypt. He had been the pastor of a large denominational church. One of his parishioners had seen the lessons, had completed the course, and passed it on to his pastor. After the pastor completed the course, in corresponding with Brother Sana for several months, he said, "Come and baptize me." So he went down. Brother Sana went down into Cairo, Egypt, and baptized this man. He was living in a parsonage, pastoring a huge church. He resigned his pastorate and began preaching for the Church of God, the newfound doctrines that he had come to learn about. He had about 75 people coming together for services, and one night as he returned home to his little apartment, several men pounced upon him, beat him up, poured gasoline on him, and burned him until over half of his body was burned and scarred because of his preaching the gospel message he had come to learn. And so as we were in Lebanon, Brother Sana had brought this man to Beirut, was nursing him back to health, and he was then about ready to return and is now back in Cairo, Egypt, preaching the gospel of the kingdom of God. And then as we visited India 6 years ago, Brother Patrick and I, we found our people there meeting in a little building the size of a single garage. And as we came back then and made this report of the many people trying to get into this little building, funds were raised to build a church. And now as we return 6 years later, we find six congregations carrying on services. We find nine Sunday schools being conducted. We find two church buildings. And now the third one is being built with the most recent mission builder's assistance. This will be a medical church facility, and we were thrilled with the hopes and the desires of these people to have this place of worship and to be able to administer to the sick and to the poverty-stricken people of their area. Thanks to a family outside of the church who are providing the funds to carry on this medical work, the hiring of a doctor and furnishing of the medications for this medical work. You no doubt will hear more of this tomorrow afternoon as the foreign mission program or department presents their program. And so it is a thrill to see this great progress that is being made in India. And then we also had the opportunity to meet a man named P.M. Paulson. Probably you've read about it in the journal, but I want to tell you about this man. This is a young man who is now 29 years of age, who grew up in a Hindu family. When he was 16 years old, he was hearing people talking about Jesus Christ. And so he went out and bought himself a little Bible in a little bookstore, and he took the Bible home and began to read it. When his father saw him reading the Bible, he all but threw him out of the house, told him never to read that book again. But the boy hid the Bible out and continued to read, and soon convinced himself by what he read in that Bible that he needed to be immersed in the waters of baptism. And this young man at 16 years of age went out and found a minister who would immerse him in the waters of baptism. He resigned the little government job that he had and began preaching the newfound things that he was finding in this great book that he had come to know. Since that time, he has won his Hindu family. He has won a witch doctor over to Christianity. He has converted many people. He has five congregations in and around Hyderabad, India. About a year and a half ago, this man came across the tract. The tract was entitled, "Is Jesus God?" published by the Church of God General Conference. To show you how literature works, we have no idea how this tract came into this little isolated, out-of-the-way village in inner India. But this young man read this tract and found in it the very things he had come to know from reading his Bible. And so this young man wrote to the Church of God General Conference and Sister Carr has been corresponding with him. We asked Brother Manoah to go and visit with him. And now as we were there, we had him come down to Bangalore that we might meet him and the man Philip, who was formerly a witch doctor. And we were thrilled to talk to this young man. While he may have had a few little differences of opinion of certain things, these things that he had come to learn by his own study, he's a dedicated worker and believes most all of the doctrines of the Church of God, and I could say perhaps less differences than some of our ministers who are on the grounds today. And so we were thrilled to meet this man. And he's gone back to his people. He's now taking the systematic study course. He's studying with Brother Manoah. And here we have five congregations proclaiming this great gospel message in Inner India. And then our Philippine brethren, who have been persecuted and harassed for preaching the gospel, especially over the radio. They have been beaten and molested in every possible way. They have been brought into court. They're having one trouble after another, but they are dedicated to the ministry of the preaching of the gospel of the kingdom, and nothing will stop them. They sometimes have to send the tapes in. Sometimes they have to smuggle them in. Sometimes they're able to go in person, but the gospel message continues to go out. And so it certainly was a great thrill for me to be able to visit this place, these places, not once, but the second time. And so I want to express my thanks now to all those who did contribute to the cost of the expense of my trip, because my trip was completely paid. I was happy to have with me my wife Peg and Brother Merle Patrick of the Mission Board, who both went with me on this trip at their own expense. We're extremely happy to have them with us, because there are so many times, as you're in a foreign country, it's difficult to speak to the people. They have a different way of expression. Many times it's hard to understand them. And so it's good to have someone that you can talk to about these things. And so before we go into our pictures, before we begin showing the slides, and we hope it's dark enough now that they'll show up all right, we would like to introduce Peg and Pat. First, we'll call on Sister Peg Ross, my good wife, who is dressed in the sari that she brought back from India. Peg, will you step up and be greeted, say a word or two?
Well, needless to say, this was probably the most exciting thing that ever happened to me. It was a thrill beyond anything that I've ever experienced. Not just the travel. This was exciting to me because I haven't traveled a great lot. But the thing that was exciting to me and thrilling beyond compare was the love that was engulfed us every place we went. We were greeted and loved and accepted without question asked. And if you ever in the world feel unwanted or unloved, go to a foreign mission field. They love you, and I think they expressed all their love to you, to us, to bring back. And we were treated like visiting royalty. It's beyond anything I can describe. I just choke up and want to cry when I think about it. But it's a marvelous, marvelous experience. I thank all those that did help me, and praise God that I could go.
Brother Pat?
Of course, it was a wonderful opportunity for me, and I was with Stan on the original trip in 66, and the progress that has been made is almost unbelievable, and the possibilities are even greater. Brother Manoah has some trained workers that are working with him, young men that seem to be very capable, and the Philippines have a number of young men that it looks like it's just an explosive situation that can go most any place. Our opportunities are terrific. And I appreciated the opportunity to go, and can't help feeling a little ashamed. Their dedication rather puts us to shame at times.
Thank you very much, Pat and Peg. And now the screen, as you can see, hanging in front of you. Please move now. We'll give you just a moment as we turn out the lights and prepare to show the slides. Move where you can see the screen as best you can. I'm going to be standing in front of that microphone, so if I'm in the way, someone will have to move a little. We're sorry, but we'll have to stand there in order to narrate the pictures. So if we can have the lights, we'll go ahead with the pictures at this time. It is on February 6th that we left Chicago and then New York and flew on to Frankfurt, Germany. There we spent about a day and a half simply to rest and recoup because of the time change matter. And then we flew on in this Pan Am 747 jet to Beirut, Lebanon. We arrived in Beirut, and this is a view from the back of our hotel window, looking out over the Mediterranean Sea with the sun up in the sky and a boat lying out in the harbor of the Mediterranean. This is a picture of the embassy, the American embassy in Beirut. This was a very important place to us because we had understood when we went to Beirut that Brother Sanaa would have to own a place of worship by July of 1972 or go out of business as a church. With some help from the American embassy and in checking other things, we had it worked out so he can continue on in the rented facility. And so we were very well treated by our American embassy and appreciated their help. This is the meeting place where Brother Sanaa and his church group in Beirut are meeting. It's in an apartment building, the first floor of an apartment building. They have a large meeting room and two smaller little rooms for Sunday school. This is a few of the as they were gathering for the service on Sunday morning. We want you to note, here's another part of the group there on Sunday, and we want you to notice the refuse in the streets and the gutters. This is very common throughout the Middle East. We spoke there on Wednesday night. We intended to have a Bible study, but because many of them could not understand English, we decided to bring a message both on Wednesday night and twice on Sunday, and so we would speak and Brother Sanaa would interpret for me as we would go along. This is Brother Sanaa in the pulpit and his wife playing the piano, which was right beside the pulpit. This is quite dark, but it is a picture of the group who were there on Wednesday night as we met in the little meeting hall in Beirut, Lebanon. I think there were about 40 people there. This is Brother Sanaa and his family. The older girl, the one in the back on the right, will be getting through high school this next year and will try to go on to college. Brother Sanaa was a Jordanian by birth, and because of becoming a Christian, he was driven out of the country, and that's why he lives in Lebanon. And so he has to pay tuition for his children to go to school at all. This is Brother Shaker Iskander and his family, the man who was converted from another pastorate and who was severely burned. This is his family, and he has another older son who is in the Navy and who is also doing some preaching and teaching of God's Word in Alexandria, Egypt. Well, we took a visit with Brother and Sister Sanaa down to Baalbek, and I had a ride on the camel, and wherever I go, they all say, well, you got to show this at General Conference, and so I didn't back out, but I showed it. We were met and saw many of these ruins there that have been restored and are being restored and are still left there from the couple centuries or more ago, built by the Romans, no doubt, and some of the other civilizations. But I want to tell you a little bit about these large pillars. They are 8 foot across, 75 feet high, with much handiwork, carvings and whatnot. And these stone are not native to Lebanon, but had to be brought in from the Upper Nile. And no one knows how these huge pillars were brought there over 2,000 years ago. This is another view of the same pillars with the Lebanese mountains in the background, snow-covered. That snow looks pretty good tonight. There's a picture of us having lunch as we were visiting there, and the reason we put it in is to show the bread. Bakeries are great in Lebanon. They're great on pastries, and this Brother Patrick is holding up this piece of bread, probably 2 feet square, very thin, and this is one of their breads. They have many kinds of breads and pastries in Lebanon. We visited both Tyre and Sidon. This is some of the ruins that are being restored in the old city of Tyre, which you know was completely covered and destroyed at one time. And this is the arch into the city, and the tombs are being dug up. Many of these tombs still have bones, many bones in them. We saw a number of skulls in some of these tombs. This is the seashore at Tyre. This is where Paul prayed with the Christians there as he started his last journey back to Jerusalem. On the way back from Tyre, we stopped at Sidon, and this is a view of the city of Sidon from a fortress, and you see the mosque and the minaret, which are, you see them all over the Middle East and the Arab countries. The security is very strong here as we travel down to Tyre, which is getting close to the Israeli border. They took our passports and held them and kept them until we returned so we wouldn't go across the border to Israel. This is a picture back in Beirut, and we wanted to show it to you to show you that really much of Beirut is a very modern city. Some of the old parts, of course, are very old and dilapidated, but they are building huge apartment houses and huge buildings because Beirut is the gateway to the whole Middle East, and it's a very standards of living are very high, and it's a very modern city. This is a picture looking the other direction from the same place to show you the very blue water of the Mediterranean Sea. It's truly a very beautiful sea. And then we traveled to Israel, and we're only going to show you just a few pictures of our stop there. This is the old city of Jerusalem, which is within the modern city of Jerusalem. This is the Damascus Gate in the old walled city. You notice the headdress of the man walking down. This is a very, very common dress in Israel. This is the little narrow streets of the old city of Jerusalem, not over 6 or 8 feet wide in many places. But it was a real thrill to walk here, knowing that Jesus, Paul, the other apostles and disciples walked these very streets over 2,000 years ago. They're all little shops on the sides and very crowded. This is the Garden of Gethsemane, which it looks like it might have looked 2,000 years when Jesus was there. The old olive trees are claimed to be over 2,000 years old, which if they are, of course, were there when Jesus was in the garden with his disciples. And this is a picture of the garden tomb where most of Christianity believes Jesus was buried. It's a cave in the side of the mount, and most Christians believe this is the garden tomb. There's a garden in front of it where you can sit and meditate, and it's a real thrill and an inspiration to sit there and meditate in this beautiful garden in front of the tomb. And then just to the right of the tomb is this area, which is called the place of the skull because of the two eye sockets you see, and it's believed that this is Calvary, or the place of the skull, which is just outside of the walls of the old city of Jerusalem. And this is the East Gate, looking for the Mount of Olives toward the East Gate, which has been closed, sometimes called the Golden Gate. It is believed that Jesus will return through this gate when he comes back to this earth. And just inside of the gate and to the left is the temple area. We had to go on then and fly from Israel to Cyprus and then on to Bangalore, India. We went to Bombay and then down to Bangalore, and this is part of the group who met us that Saturday morning in Bangalore, India. You notice the garlands around our neck. We had these wherever we would stop in India. They would bring us these floral garlands. Here's another picture of much of the group that was there to meet us. This is the church, the Thomastown Church in Bangalore, India, that was built in 1966 and dedicated in July 67. With the funds that were raised upon our return from our 1966 trip. A very, very attractive, beautiful, impressive building. Brother Manoah laid out the plans, and most of the work was done by the people of the church. The little area, the little building on the left, is the social hall where they have their little social affairs and their Sunday school classes. This is a picture taken from the other side, another view, early in the morning against the rising sun. But you notice the fence in front, and almost all of the main buildings in India are fenced for protection. This is the front door of the building. Brother Manoah standing there, and you notice the hand-carved doors. I have no idea how much these might cost here. It's sandal wood and all carved and just beautiful, beautiful doors. And this is a picture of the inside. They do have benches in this church. There are other churches. They sit on the floor in their meeting halls and in their homes when they have services. This is a group that are singing, and you notice the beautiful saris. The ladies all wear the saris and usually have a flower in their hair. This is the music with the singing of the hymns. They always have five or six or seven people playing various instruments, and their singing is real enthusiastic and beautiful, and we certainly enjoyed all of our services there. This is Brother and Sister Manoa in the front of the church there with their two boys. This is Brother Manoa in the pulpit as he is speaking there and leading the services on Sunday morning. We preached on that morning. There were over 300 there from the Thomastown Church and also from some of the other churches. It was a real thrill to speak to these brethren in India. And during the morning of the service, we had a baptismal service in the tank, which is just beside the church. We had the privilege of assisting 19 in putting on Christ that Sunday morning there in this baptistry. The first night we arrived, they took us out beside the church and showed us a plaque, that a marble plaque that had been prepared. And here I am putting some cement in the side of the building, and here the plaque has been erected. This is a permanent memorial to the visit of Peg and myself and Brother Patrick. Just to the right of this is another plaque similar to it, which was placed there when Brother and Sister Dr. and Mrs. Lawrence went there in, I believe it was 1968. This is the little social hall where we had some refreshments and a social on Sunday afternoon. They pass out a little drink and a little biscuit to each person that is there. These are the people that are doing the serving. We wanted you to see the little table in back of it is three chairs. Most everybody sits on the floor in the social hall and the meeting places we visited. But wherever we'd come, wherever we'd arrive, there'd always be three chairs for we Americans. We rather think that they hustled around and took the same three chairs to most places. This is as they were passing out the little edibles, as they call it. And in the background, you might see Brother Patrick. He's passing out balloons. Ashland, Ohio, where he lives, is the balloon capital of the world. And he took balloons with him and just had a heyday passing out balloons in all the airports and wherever there were children. And they really loved it. And it was a great icebreaker. And then just a few blocks from the church, we come upon this scene. This is typical India. You notice the ditch that has run down in front of these houses, these homes. They're not houses, they're homes to these people. Little buildings, 10 or 12 feet square. Nothing in the room, whatever. And here is the sewage system. Everything, all refuse, are either out on the ground or in this little ditch. And then beside it, you see the little planks laid out there, and this is the cow dung that is being laid out to dry. After it's dried, this cow dung is taken into the house, and what little cooking is done, the little cooking of the rice, is done over a little open fire, burning this cow dung in most cases. The cattle just roam all over the city and all over India, and it's a very, very filthy, dirty area. This is an area that we visit probably 8 or 10 of our families, of our church families living in this immediate area. Again, you see the sewage ditch running right in front of the homes. One of the homes we were in, we could hardly breathe because of the burning of the cow dung. They had just apparently cooked a little rice. And there's just no way to bring back the real picture of India. When we think of the sights and the sounds and the smells and all the rest, there's just no way to bring it back in a word description or a picture. But that's the best we can do, is show you what it looks like, but words cannot describe the living conditions of these people. And these people are our brothers in Christ. We had services almost every day in some place, sometimes two or three times. This is the Austintown group that we're gathering together for a service on, I believe, Tuesday morning. Here we're waiting for the service, and here again you might see us. I think that's my knees there. We're on chairs. Everybody else is on the ground. After the service, we went out in front and took a picture of these people who were there at the service. Again, we want to point out the beautiful saris. Again, we had flowers or garlands around our neck. I believe these were the sandalwood lays. And they smell very beautiful. We brought them home and we hang them on our closet. In fact, they're very, very fine smelling. And then we visited the little community called Chinapilye, which simply means small village. This is a little suburb, we'd call it, of Bangalore, with probably 50 or 60 of these little homes. We have many of our people who wanted to have a little church there. And so the people of India, Brother Manoah and Brother Robert and some of the others, got together and built them this little church. It's probably 12 by 16 in size. All it has in one corner is a little pulpit. We had a service here in the afternoon, I think Thursday afternoon, about 4 o'clock, and we had 65 people crowded into this little small building, sitting on the floor just as tight as they could sit together as we preached to them there. This is the group as they were out in front of the church. And then the same evening, we went over to the St. John College area and had a service in the one of the apartments there. These people in the St. John area are a little higher standard of living. They have a little better jobs. Most jobs in India will pay like 40 to 45 cents a day. But the people in the St. John College area, some of them work in the hospital there and so on, have a little better job. And it is this group, the St. John College area and the Austin congregation, who will join together in using the new building that is now being erected with Mission Builders Assistance from Appeal Number 28, which is being collected now. This is Brother P.M. Paulson, the man who I told you was a convert from Hinduism by his own study, the man on the left. And the man on the right is Philip, who was formerly a witch doctor. We could converse very little with him because he had practically no English. We could speak quite well with Brother Paulson. He's a very fine, clean-cut, very dedicated young man. This is Paulson and Philip with Pat and Peg and I in front of the Manoah home. The Manoahs have quite recently moved into this little home, and it's really quite nice, comparable to many of the other homes we saw in India. This is Paulson and Philip again with the Manoahs. And then we went and visited another little home, and here is a little baby, probably only a few weeks old, laying here on the ground. This little baby is covered only with a few rags, and this is not unusual in India to see most of the children running around with just a little undershirt on until they were even 6, 7, or 8 years old. So Peg picked up the little baby, of course, and cuddled it. And here we had a picture. This is the parents on either side of her, and that's the little home in the background. By the way, that was Sister Manoah with the white sari and the black purse. This is another one of the homes, just this area that you see right back of that door. A little area, again, about 10 by 12. And there are a series of these down along the line, maybe 8 or 10, each one being a home of its own. You see the holes in the roof. And this is another one of the housing areas that we visited where many of our people were. Just over to the right of this area was an open, like we would call a cistern, about 8 feet across, about 10 or 12 feet deep. I'm sure it was just runoff water that came there during the rainy season, which was like almost 8 months before we were there. People were coming with cans and dipping out this water. It was just as filthy, black, dirty as it could be. And I'm sure that many of them used it for cooking as well as other things. This is a typical scene in India. This is right across the street from the Thomastown Church. This man is in front of his little home. He and his family live here. He is the caretaker of the church, and he actually sleeps in the church. This man is rather elderly, and he was one of the 19 that we had the privilege to baptize when we were there. And then we went out to the new lot that was purchased last fall and winter. $1,000 was raised to buy this lot, and this is where the medical church facility will be built. It looks sort of barren as you look ahead, but off to the left is a residential area, a large police station, and well built up. And then in back to our back of from where we're looking is St. John's College, and the hospital is being built there, and it's a very busy area. And so here we're laying the cornerstone. We actually laid this stone. I put down a piece, and Brother Patrick and Peg put down a piece. And this corner, that building will set. Literally, this will be one of the corners of this new building. These four men in the white jackets with Brother Manoah are the young men who he is training to help in the ministry there. When we were there in 66, we realized the great need to have some help for Brother Manoah in case something would happen to him and he was being overworked. And we encouraged him to pick out some young men and train them. And so these four young men are very dedicated. They do part of the preaching now at some of these six churches. They help with the opening of the services, with the calling, and are being a great help to Brother Manoah in his work. These are the four bicycles that these young men ride. And the reason I put the bicycle picture in, some 20 years ago, we of the people of Minnesota, we lived in Minnesota at that time, sent money for Brother Manoah to have a bicycle. A year ago at this time, Brother Randall, in memory of his wife who had died recently, sent money to buy three more bicycles. And the reason we put it in is to show you what good care they took of the 20-year-old bicycle. We couldn't tell which was the old one and which was the new one, and I'm sure you can't in the picture. This is the bulletin board in front of the Thomastown Church, just to show you what a full schedule of Brother Manoah and his people do carry on. This is a rice field just outside of Bangalore. Many of our people, families, work in rice fields. The land baron will own the field, and the workers will go out and work for a few cents a day. They are threshing the rice here, pounding it out on a canvas, sort of a canvas. It's winnowed out, the straw is piled up, and then the rice is sold back to the workers for a fee. This is a little shoe store where Brother Patrick went down to buy his python shoes after the service. And you may have noticed he had on a jacket tonight. I forgot to mention it. The shirt he had on is a Filipino shirt. This is a well-dressed man in the Philippines. And if you also look at him after the service and look at his shoes, he has on a pair of python shoes, actually made out of python skin. These men sit there in this little place. They look like they would know nothing, but they make shoes and make wonderful shoes. Because I went to get a pair also, and they didn't have any big enough for me. So they drew a picture around my foot on a piece of paper, and 3 days later, I went back and picked up the shoes that I have on, wonderfully built and very comfortable. This is taken in front of our hotel. It's Brother and Sister Robert Manoah. Many of you met Emily Manoah when she was here. That would be 2 years ago, wouldn't it? When Sister Emily was here studying in Phoenix, this little girl that she's holding was only a few weeks or a couple months old when she came. And this is Sister Emily Manoah, her husband Robert, and their daughter. The trees in Bangalore and the bushes are all very flowered and very, very beautiful, as you see there. This is Peg and her sari, again in front of this bush in front of our hotel. This is Peg with the older Manoah boy, who she is sponsored in school, and they had to have a picture as she was dressed in her sari there. And this is a typical downtown street scene in Bangalore, India. You see the dress, the man with the long skirt affair. They can roll that up, and it'll look like the man to the right. And then over in the left, if you can see him, the old man pulling this two-wheel cart with a huge load on it. You see all modes of transportation. You see the cows running around, the goats and the sheep, and buses, and you see every mode of transportation imaginable. And then we see the Hindu shrines, temples. These are hand-carved clear to the top. These are all gods or goddesses of one kind or another. And these people go into these temples and worship these gods. And so Brother Manoah is dedicated to try to reach these people with the true gospel message. In one of these temples, I took this picture of a goddess. I believe it's called Vishnu, which many of them worship. It's either this or a statue of a bull or an animal of some kind. And it's horrible the way they worship. And if we could only bring them the true God. This is a picture of a portion of a bull where people are going to lay a vegetable or a fruit in front of it and pray to a god like this. And now this is another typical scene in India. You see the man laying on the wall. This is probably his only home. In the background, you see the little lean-to tent. The people walking around with virtually nothing on. Poverty-stricken people, and truly it is a poverty nation. And so we had to leave Bangalore, and here we have a group that came down early that morning to see us off. We flew from Bangalore to Bombay and spent a wonderful day there. This is a view of the crowded city of Bombay, millions and millions of people just crowded together. And again, the poverty is even worse, I believe, here than it is in Bangalore, and I know Calcutta is even worse than that. And then we had to fly on and go to the Philippine Islands. This is the area of northern Luzon where most of our churches are located. Very, very mountainous, rough area. This is Brother Ortiguero, which many of you met when he was here in 1963. This is the church at Yadawan, which is the headquarters church, and also the living quarters in the back for Brother Ortiguero and his family. This church was built with Mission Builders Assistance back in 65, and we dedicated this building when we were there in 1966. This is a church at San Nicolas, and a group of the worshipers there. That's a little, just a little thatched, covered building. And this is the church at Quezon. Again, very rustic, but this is their church building and their place of worship and the people who attend. And then we met with these seven people, and Peg and Pat and I, in Manila. We did not have opportunity to visit the churches this time because of the trouble that's going on there and also because of time. But we had these seven people came down and spent two wonderful days with us. Days of Bible study, days when we talked about their work, when we had singing, when Brother Ortiguero brought a message and I brought a message. It was a real inspiration to be with these dedicated workers for the Lord. And then as we were about to depart, we had a joint prayer service that will be long remembered by all of us. And so then we had to leave the Philippine Islands and go on back to Honolulu and on to Phoenix, Arizona for the missionary conference there in March of last year. Now, many of you might have questions, but I think because of the press of time, we probably will withhold the questions until tomorrow at the mission service. If anyone has any questions, I think we will leave them until that time. That completes the pictures that we have. If we can have the lights on, we'll return to the rostrum for the completion of the service. And so it's obvious to see that there's a great need for the preaching of the gospel. The people of these countries are hungry for the gospel message. And so it's a real privilege for us to, I think we should be, we feel it a real privilege to be able to assist these people. They do so much with so little. And the money and the funds that we send go so far. And so we have dedicated workers for the Lord in these foreign countries and pray God that they might continue and that we might have other fields that we might reach into. And then we must not forget that all the mission fields are not in Africa and India, but we also have mission fields in the United States, in Canada, and in our home areas. And so there's a great need for the preaching of the gospel and the carrying out of the great gospel message even in this area. And so we believe tonight there might be one or there might be more who would like to dedicate their life to the service of the Lord. And if there is one or more, will they come forward as Brother Madison leads us in the final song tonight? Will you come forward and give me your hand and give God your heart and say that you want to be a Christian, that you want to be in the body of Christ, and that you want to also be a worker for the Lord?